But the other thing was really understanding where are our audiences. And yes, print is essential. I think it's going to be kind of the foundation, and it will always be a core part of the Publisher Journal. Whether it goes to twice a month, whether it goes to weekly, that will be something we have to decide down the road. Hmm. But for right now, we felt after speaking with so many readers and funders and underwriters and people who have contributed, was trying to find some of these new platforms. And of course, the podcast, which we're doing now, yeah, is going to be one of the new platforms that we'll be doing regularly. And I'm excited because we've kind of put together a lineup. We won't announce them today because we're still working with all of them. But the whole point of Voices of Pueblo is to bring in all of these different voices from throughout the community.
This was said in December of 2022 as the Pueblo Star Journal got ready to jump into a new year with a new focus on podcasting. That was Gregory Howell, our board chairman. He was discussing what the next year was going to look like. Thank you so much for joining us. This is the year in review for the Pueblo Star Journal. We're going to take a look at some of the podcasts we've done during the year, some quick segments. I'm Ben Case, and I'm going to be leading you through it. I'm way excited to jump in. We're going to start with Coach John Riston. He was with CSU Pueblo for quite a long time. He won the championship in 2014. He announced his retirement this last year, and we got to do an interview with him to start off our new podcasting slate in 2023.
The Thunderwolves became, and very much are, a huge part of Pueblo's sports scene. So talk to me a little bit about how has Pueblo as a community embraced you, embraced the Thunderwolves over these years?
Well, I think that we made Saturday afternoons in the fall an event. Pueblo's an event-oriented town. They come out for special things. And we have developed a great passion for representing the city of Pueblo, and it just happens to be CSU Pueblo that represents that. We made it a chance for the city to come out on the hill, per se.
Yeah.
And we made an event for the tailgaters and the people that want to enjoy a Saturday afternoon. And so I've been entrenched in Pueblo, Colorado. I love the people of Pueblo, Colorado. I value what it stands for. And I'm lucky to be a citizen here in this city, and I'm going to continue to represent that.
Up next, we had a story of some pretty crazy proportions back with Bridie Murphy. This was back in February. Taylor Blanchard wrote the story for us, and here he is talking about Bridie Murphy, a story of hypnotism and a little bit of craziness here in Pueblo back in the 60s.
Tige was able to go into a deep trance, meaning that once she had gone through that initial, you know, relaxed state, look at the candle held 18 inches from your face at 45 degrees. Go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep. Once she got there and was able to stay there, her trance was deeper than many of the subjects that he had encountered before. And that's just dependent on people.
That's interesting.
Everybody has a different level there. Some people claim they can't be hypnotized. And while that's not necessarily true, while you can accept suggestions even under a light trance or under no trance at all, there are others, still very strong-minded, thinking, rational people, but they're just able to get to that more relaxed, open to suggestion, accepting place.
Okay, up next, in March, we had a new restaurant idea come to Pueblo. Check it out right here with the Fuel and Iron.
The tenants can go in and all they have to focus on is their concept, their menu, their branding, and cultivating their customer market. Hmm. We take care of the front of house operations. We take care of a lot of the infrastructure. There's a very small cost for the tenants to get into the food hall and have all of that wraparound support compared to opening a brick and mortar. And so what we're doing is incubating these businesses to the point where they're going to be sufficient enough to open their own brick and mortar eventually.
We got the opportunity to chronicle the Pueblo Chieftain Commercial Press. Actually ended up being right before they announced their shutdown, but with Todd Albo, who is one of the key managers there, he got to sit down with us, and we did a full article talking about the impact of the Chieftain Commercial Press, and that bit of journalism really has mattered this last year.
We actually, when the press was being built and getting ready to fire up, we still had the old press as a standby. So we would make plates for the new press and for the old press in case something happened, you know, for a couple months before we totally said, okay, we're one press only.
So how old was the old press whenever it got, you know, removed?
Yeah, man, I don't even know how old, because right before I started, I think we had did a changeover, and I started in the mailroom, so I was just there. You know, I didn't waver from there, so I didn't, you know, like today, you know, everybody's does multiple tasks, you know, multiple departments. We know a lot of stuff, but back then it was, I really didn't pay attention to the press, or, you know, the pressman. So I just remember seeing the, you know, the red, little red beast in there. And
Jane Frazier and her team opened up the Ethos, a sober bar in Pueblo. She talked a lot about the creator space and really the specialness of Pueblo. Check out this podcast clip.
The essence of Pueblo is this mixture of ethnicities. And, you know, as we look at the neighborhood where our building is, I know we're going to get to that in a minute too. I just see all the multi-ethnic groups. And I think that rich mixture of all of the making cultures, potizza and other food, for example, that we make. And yeah.
That's incredible. That's so cool. So,
yes. So besides what do you make, it could be what do you eat? I don't know.
Yeah, what do you eat? What do you cook?
Yeah,
I
right.
love that.
In 2023, the Pueblo Chemical Weapons Depot finished decommissioning all of their mustard gas weapons. We got to be a part of that, and we got to go in and tour and write an article. And then we had, this was Walton Levi came in. He's the senior project manager, to discuss that project and just how proud he was of the team. So let's hear a little bit of that.
But I could tell, you know, for the local community the contractors that we brought in, we are a contract-operated facility. It's not a government. That this was a huge challenge for them and something just working through, you know, the complexities of how to do it safely, how to do it environmental compliantly. So, you know, starting here, doing the design, doing the build, doing the systemization. So that whole, it seemed like a big task at the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just take it 1 week at a time, 1 month at a time, 1 year. And these 15 years have really flown by.
One of my favorite stories of the year was Jimmy Dunn. He's a climber who lives in Pueblo West now, who has done some legendary things, including a massive climb on El Capitan. He did it solo. Listen to a little clip of this.
So then that's when I decided to solo it.
Wow.
Yeah, so a lot went on. I didn't just say, well, I'm going to go solo a climb and it'll be great. Oh, no.
So it was just improvising a plan. You had the fire to climb it.
I figured this. I have an old car, $115. I didn't have any money. I'd quit school. I didn't have a job. I'm not leaving. And halfway up, I said, I'm never coming down. I'll die before I come down, which I wouldn't say now, but I said then.
Yeah.
It was so that's what led up to soloing it.
Deborah and Juan Espinoza got the Song of Pueblo started. It's a performance that encapsulates the entire history of Pueblo, starting very early all the way up to pretty recently. Listen to them as they talk about that project.
The Song of Pueblo is about Pueblo's history.
Mm-hmm.
We cover about 300 years.
Wow.
And move through eras. And our history is so complicated that I thought it would be easier to do it with music than with an exhibit.
Another one of our projects this year was the 45 Degrees miniseries. So we had a few different artists who have been painting on the Pueblo Levy mural project. We're called 45 Degrees because they have to paint on a 45 degree angle on that levee. So we had many different interviews throughout the year. Here's a few clips kind of back to back. We had Cynthia Ramu, Shannon Palmer, Jen DeGroot, Celeste Velasquez, Aspen Pounds, and Robert Hall on to discuss their different mural projects. So let's just listen to some of them as they talk about the projects and some of the things that stood out to them.
I'm just excited that I'm around to be able to be a part to help that happen. And I want to help create a legacy from the old to the new and let it grow, find new leaders, find more people that can help support this vision. Because in the beginning, when I got started, I'm like, hey, you guys, what's the name of this? The Levy. And I'm like, how about we name it? You know, so, yeah, and it's something that's growing and morphing all the time.
I just went back to college 5 years ago and got my art degree. So my whatever skill set you see on the wall and everything is not natural talent. It's hard work in school and practice. So I think I kind of just had to make up my mind of like, I wanted to be an artist and I was always going to make an excuse that I was a college dropout. So I kind of just got my shit together and decided I was going to totally throw myself in that direction. Mm-hmm. So I think I just see that I'm good at it. And I'm a fairly organized business person too. So I'm seeing the avenues where I can make a living out of it and I'm just going for it.
When I first moved here, I did a hiking trip up the west peak of Wauhatoya. We left Pueblo at 4 a.m. to make the drive, and since we were driving due south to reach the peak, I got to watch the sunrise unfold across the faces of the mountain, and the beauty of that moment just stole my heart. It was so early in the morning, I barely got sleep the night before, and almost everyone else in the van was asleep, but I couldn't sleep if I wanted to as I saw that sunrise unfold. It was so beautiful, and I just hope that my design conveys the joy and the love that I felt in that moment for what was unfolding in front of me.
Yeah, overall, I just like to express my original thought through my work. And the basis of my work is to build a connection with the viewers and the people that are looking at it, whether that be like feelings of anger or happiness or sadness or whatever it may be, and however it resonates with the person that's looking at it. I just want to bridge that connection, because at the end of the day, that's what art's all about. And so many artists like pour their heart and soul into their pieces and what they make, and a lot of times it's either overlooked or due to certain circumstances, like they just might not care or whatever it may be. But at the end of the day, it's self-expression.
So it was always kind of a goal of mine, really, to paint on the levee, especially since it once was in the Guinness Book of World Records as the world's largest mural, and they're trying to get that record up again. So it's kind of cool to be involved in that, you know, and to strive for a Guinness World Record. So yeah, I always wanted to do it. I saw the opportunity came up on Facebook, and I submitted a design and got approved. So that's how it happened.
My dog, these people started fighting, and my dog ran away because I don't really keep him on a leash. But he took off running, and he was gone. I couldn't find him, and he was out on the land, man, for like 3 or 4 days. And then we had like put out some posters and stuff, and my girl had like put some stuff on like social media and stuff about you know, looking for the dog. And then somebody calls me at like 5 in the morning, and he's like, "Hey, I think I see your dog, man. He's on the river." I'm like, cool. And it was a concrete worker that was working on a levee. Mm-hmm. So I go down there, man, and sure enough, he was stuck on this island. Like, the dude said he had like slid down the wall into the water and then was stuck on this little island. So when I got there, you know, I kind of like shimmied down the wall, called him into the water, and he swam to me, and I grabbed him out, and I, you know, like crab walked or whatever back up the thing. Mm-hmm. And then right there, I talked to Cynthia like a couple days later, and I was like, yo, I want to put a mural right there where I pulled my dog out of the water.
As we made our way towards Election Day, we were able to interview all of the mayoral candidates for Pueblo's election, all of them that were on the ballot. So that was Chris Nickel, Dennis Flores, Derek Trujillo, Larry Atencio, Randy Thurston, Regina Maestri, Tom Crishall, and then the two finalists, Heather Graham and Nick Gratisar. You can go check out those full podcasts. We've got some clips here from Heather and Nick talking about some of their platform as we get ready for the runoff election.
What's special about Pueblo? What are the good things that you've seen in this community?
So I currently own three restaurants, and then my husband owns a gym. So We're deep rooted in Pueblo. I love Pueblo. I love the downtown area. Live downtown. You know, we mm-hmm. get to walk to all the great restaurants, and the Riverwalk is fantastic. You know, we have a symphony, we have an ice arena, we have Lake Pueblo, we have a lot to offer in Pueblo. Mm. We have the rail, we have energy, you know, we have all these great things. It's just, it's combating all the negative that is continuously focused on Pueblo. And I don't know, I think Pueblo is the place to be. We got water, we got land, it's affordable to be here. And I'm excited. I'm happy to live here, excited to grow my businesses here. So.
Well, obviously, I think are on the verge of an economic boom. Mm. But what's so special about Pueblo is its people. Mm. You know, people came to Pueblo 150 years ago, 125 years ago, from all over the world to make the steel that built the American West. And they built our neighborhoods. They built our churches. Mm. They brought with them a can-do attitude that still exists in this community today. At one time, there were 40 languages spoken at the mill. So all those different cultures sort of molded together to build Pueblo. They've sort of retained their own cultural identities. Mm. So we still, each of us have our own traditions and things like that. But I think that's what makes Pueblo unique in Colorado. Mm. Not other cities in Colorado were built in that fashion. Some of them have immigrants now, but I mean, we were built by immigrants from all over the world, as I said, and you can see it in our neighborhoods and our churches and in even on our attitudes today. So I think Pueblo is a much more tolerant community than other places around. So that's what I think makes Pueblo really special is its people.
2023 was a very special time for the Pueblo Star Journal. We were able to take big steps, including getting our office going, getting new initiatives going in the paper, and of course, jumping into more podcasts and audio. We thank you so much for being along with us for the ride, as we really try to represent Pueblo, and we really couldn't do it without you. So we're very thankful that you've come along the ride with us, and we look so forward to 2024 and telling more of Pueblo stories and taking them beyond the page. For Ben Kaysen and the entire Pueblo Star Journal team, we thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day.